Delightful party, isn't it, Mr. Syme? So artistic.
Artistic is undoubtedly the word for it.
I always say that Lucian Gregory gives quite the most artistic parties in Saffron Park. Don't you agree?
And have you ever been in these parts before, Mr. Syme?
No, this is my first visit to Saffron Park. Do you live here?
Oh, I do, indeed, yes. I'm a neighbour of Lucian Gregory's. Most London suburbs are deadly, of course, but Saffron Park's different. Different in every way. Why, even our sunsets are different.
Yes, there's something unreal about such a sunset. It looks like the end of the world.
Something unreal about everything in this place, if you ask me, sir.
I gather that you also are a visitor here.
Yes.
And yet, you know, even if these people aren't really artists, as they like to think, they are, in a sense, works of art. Hmm? Take our host, Lucian Gregory. He's not really a poet, but with that long auburn hair and impudent face, he's surely a poem.
You talk as if you were a poet yourself.
I am, but not a poet of lawlessness, Gregory. I am a poet of law, a poet of order.
You say you are a poet of law, Mr. Syme. I say you are a contradiction in terms.
Do tell us what you mean, Mr. Gregory. You always put things so cleverly.
An artist is identical with an anarchist. The poet abolishes all conventions, delights in disorder only. If it were not so, the most poetical thing in the world would be the Underground Railway.
So it is. It is you who are unpoetical. Chaos is dull. Because in chaos, a train might go anywhere. But man is a magician, and his magic is this, that when he says, next stop, Victoria, lo, it is Victoria.
Stuff and nonsense.
I insist, it is things going right that is poetical. Our digestions, for instance, going sacredly and silently right, that is the foundation of all poetry. The most poetical thing in the world is not being sick. Oh,
really, Syme? The examples you choose.
I beg your pardon? I thought we had abolished all conventions.
You don't expect me to revolutionize society here on this lawn?
No, I don't. But if you were serious about your anarchism, that is exactly what you would do.
Indeed. I should like a word with you, away from all these people.
By all means. Let us take a turn in the street outside.
Through here.
Thank you. Now, what did you want to say?
At the possible sacrifice of my life and honor, I am going to prove to you that you were wrong in what you said.
What did I say?
That I was not serious about being an anarchist.
You? Serious? Good Lord.
Will you swear, by whatever gods your religion involves, that you will not reveal what I tell you to anyone, and especially not to the police? Will you swear that? If you will, I will promise you in return...
What?
I will promise you a very entertaining evening.
Gregory, your offer is far too idiotic to be declined. Here and now, I swear as a Christian and promise as a fellow artist not to report anything of this, whatever it is, to the police. Now, in the name of Coney Hatch, what is it?
We will call a hansom. Cabby!
Cab, sir?
Drive us to the Anchor Tavern. It is a public house on the Chiswick bank of the river. I will direct you.
Very good, Governor.
Down here. Can you see where you're going?
Just...
Mr. Joseph Chamberlain.
Ought.
Good heavens.
A mere formality. Come in.
After you.
And now, my dear Sime, we are quite cozy. So let us talk properly.
A subterranean chamber beneath a particularly squalid beer house is not what I would describe as cozy, but let that pass.
This is one of the meeting places of the serious anarchists in whom you do not believe. Does this place strike you as being serious?
To judge from the rifles and bombs with which the walls are hung, it would appear to have a moral under all its gaiety. But may I ask you a question?
What is it?
Why, after taking so much trouble to barricade yourselves like this in the bowels of the earth, do you parade your whole secret by talking about anarchism to every silly woman in Saffron Park?
Simple. I told you I was a serious anarchist, and you did not believe me. Unless I brought them into this sinister room, they would not believe me.
I see.
The history of the thing might amuse you. When first I became an anarchist, I tried various respectable disguises. I dressed up as a bishop. When, on my first appearing in episcopal gaiters in a drawing room, I cried out in a voice of thunder, "Down, down, presumptuous human reason!" They found out in some way that I was not a bishop at all.
You astound me.
Then I tried being a major. I threw myself into the major. I drew my sword and waved it constantly. I called out blood abstractedly, like a man calling for wine. Well, it seems that majors don't do this. I was nabbed again. At last, I went in despair to the president of the Central Anarchist Council, who is the greatest man in Europe.
What's his name?
"You want a safe disguise, do you?" he said. "A dress in which no one would ever look for a bomb. Why then dress up as an anarchist, you fool? Nobody will ever expect you to do anything dangerous then." So I took his advice and have never regretted it.
You took me in. It's a smart dodge. What is the name of this tremendous president of yours?
He is called Sunday.
Sunday?
No one knows his real name. But there are 7 members of the Central Anarchist Council, and they are all called after the days of the week. Tonight, our London branch, which will assemble here in a few minutes, has to elect its own deputy to fill a vacancy in the council caused by the sudden death of the gentleman who has till now played the difficult part of Thursday. We shall go through a form of election, but it is practically settled that I am to be Thursday.
My dear fellow, I congratulate you. A great career.
As soon as the election is finished, I step out of this door which opens on the river where there is a steam tug awaiting me, and then... Oh, the wild joy of being Thursday.
Well, this is the funniest situation I've ever been in all my life. And I'm going to act accordingly. Gregory, I swore before God that I would not tell your secret to the police. Will you swear before humanity, or whatever beastly thing you believe in, that you will not tell my secret to the anarchists?
I feel a furious curiosity about you. Yes, I do swear not to tell the anarchists. But look sharp, they will be here in a minute.
Well, I'll put it in this way. Your expedient of dressing up as an aimless poet is not confined to you or your president. We use the same dodge at Scotland Yard.
What do you say?
I am a police detective.
You...
But I think I hear your friends coming. Yes, they're giving the password.
You damned spy! You won't live to tell
this tale. Don't tell you! Don't you see that we're both in the same boat? I can't tell the police you're an anarchist. You can't tell the anarchists I'm a policeman. You are not surrounded by inquisitive policemen. I am surrounded by inquisitive anarchists, by a crowd of Joseph Chamberlains. Solemn thought. I cannot betray you, but I might betray myself.
Simon.
I shall not break my word. Here are your friends.
Oh, good evening, Conway Gregory. I suppose this man is a delegate?
Yes. His name is Sime, but I
it
think...
It would be hard for anyone who was not a delegate to get past your door.
What branch do you represent?
I shouldn't call it a branch. I should call it, at the very least, a root.
What do you mean?
The fact is, I am a Sabbatarian. I have been specially sent here to see that you show a due observance of Sunday.
Oh. Well, comrade, I suppose we'd better give you a seat in the meeting.
If you ask my advice as a friend, I think you'd better.
It is time we began. And let us have as little talk as possible. The tug is waiting. I move that Comrade Buttons takes the chair.
Take chair, Comrade Buttons.
Comrades, we all lament the sad decease of the heroic worker who until last week occupied the post of Thursday on the Central European Council. Upon you, comrades, it devolves now to choose out of this company the man who shall be Thursday. Will any comrade suggest a name?
Gentlemen, I move that Comrade Gregory be elected Thursday.
I second that proposal.
Comrade Gregory is proposed by Comrade Harper, seconded by Comrade Witherspoon. But before I put the matter to the vote, I will call on Comrade Gregory to make a statement.
Comrades, I need not tell you my policy, for it is your policy also. Our belief has never been altered, but it has been slandered and disfigured. And if there were here tonight a man who all his life had been misled by these slanders, I would ask, when the early Christians met in the catacombs, what sort of moral reputation had they in the streets above? Yeah. What tales of their atrocities were told by one Roman to another? Suppose that we are repeating that mysterious paradox. Suppose we seem as mad and as shocking as the Christians because we are really as harmless and as meek.
No, I'm not meek.
I say we are meek, as the early Christians were meek. There will be
what the
no
devil is he up to?
About our
I think I see. Trying to make a softened, ambiguous speech to give me the impression that anarchism is a very mild affair after all.
With quiet courage, the ideals of brotherhood and simplicity.
Comrades, does anyone oppose the election of Comrade Gregory?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I oppose.
You, Mr. Syme?
Comrades, had we come here to listen to talk like this? There was not a word in Comrade Gregory's address to which a curate could not have listened with pleasure. But I am not a curate. And I did not listen to it with pleasure. Comrade Gregory has told us apologetically that we are not murderers. There I agree. We are not murderers. We are executioners.
Damnable hypocrite!
Comrade Gregory accuses me of hypocrisy. He knows as well as I do that I am doing nothing but my duty. I do not mince words. I say that Comrade Gregory is not fit to be Thursday. And I say that rather than have Gregory and his milk and water methods on the Supreme Council, I would offer myself for election. Not go to the council to rebut the slander that calls us murderers. I go to earn it!
I move with an amendment that Comrade Syme be appointed.
Stop it, I tell you. Stop it. It is all
does
a trick.
Does anyone second this amendment?
This man cannot be elected. He is a...
Yes, Gregory. What am I?
He is a man quite inexperienced in our work.
I beg to second the election of Comrade Syme.
The motion is that Comrade Syme be elected to the post of Thursday on the General Council. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Only Comrade Gregory is against. I therefore declare Comrade Syme elected to the post of Thursday.
Syme, you are a devil.
Yeah. Everything is ready for you, Comrade Syme. Your cloak. Allow me. Your revolver. And your sword stick. Be good enough to step this way.
The river.
And the boat is waiting for you. I bid you good evening, Comrade Syme.
Thank you, Comrade Buttons. Gregory, you are a man of honor. You have kept your word, even to a small particular. There was one thing you promised me at the beginning of this affair, which you have certainly given me.
What did I promise you?
a very entertaining evening. Good night.
Westminster Bridge and the dawn breaking. Strange if my destination should turn out to be the embankment. For that, in a sense, is where this journey of mine really began, when I became a detective. I remember there was a vivid and violent sunset that night, too. In the savage mood that possessed me, I rounded upon the passing policeman who spoke to me, though all he said was a friendly...
Good evening. Ah, you fellows would call the end of the world a good evening, and you would still be standing here as stolid and calm as ever.
If we are calm, it is the calm of organized resistance.
Eh?
The soldier must be calm in the thick of the battle. The composure of an army is the anger of a nation.
Good God, the board schools. Is this undenominational education?
No, the board schools came after my time. What education I had was very rough and old-fashioned, I'm afraid.
Where were you educated?
At Harrow.
But good Lord, man, you oughtn't to be a policeman. How comes a man like you to be talking philosophy in a blue helmet on the Thames Embankment?
The head of one of our departments, one of the most celebrated detectives in Europe, has long been of the opinion that an organized intellectual conspiracy would soon threaten the very existence of civilization.
Good heavens.
He has, therefore, formed a special corps of policemen who are also philosophers.
What do you do?
The ordinary detective goes to pothouses to arrest thieves. We go to artistic parties to detect pessimists. He discovers from a ledger or a diary that a crime has been committed. We discover from a book of sonnets that a crime will be committed. We say that the dangerous criminal is the educated criminal, and the most dangerous criminal of all is the entirely lawless modern philosopher.
How true that is. I have felt it from my boyhood. I come of a family of philosophers and cranks. One of my uncles always walked about without a hat. Another made an unsuccessful attempt to walk about with a hat, but nothing else. So, being surrounded from infancy with every conceivable kind of revolt, I had to revolt into the only thing left, sanity. And my hatred of modern lawlessness was crowned by an accident.
What sort of accident?
I was walking in a side street at the instant of a dynamite outrage. I saw the lifeless bodies on the pavement, the bleeding faces. Since then, I do not regard anarchists as most people do, as a handful of morbid intellectuals. I regard them as a huge and pitiless peril.
But you're wasting your life. You must join our special army against anarchy.
How can I join you?
Come and see the chief of whom I have spoken. No, I shouldn't say see him. Nobody ever sees him. He has a fancy for always sitting in a pitch-dark room. He says it makes his thoughts brighter. I'll take you to him.
A curious interview it was. Scotland Yard. Long, echoing corridors. And then the abrupt blackness of that pitch-dark room. Out of the darkness, a heavy voice asking, "Are you the new recruit?" How did he know about me already? And how did I know, though I could see nothing, that he was a massive man, and that he had his back to me? The calm voice, continuing irrevocably, "You are willing. That's enough. Engage." There I was, outside again, a member of the new detective corps. In an hour or two, I was transformed into an elegant poet with a flower in my buttonhole. And in my waistcoat pocket, where should be at this moment, yes, here it is, a small blue card, printed with the words, "The Last Crusade," the sign of my official authority. And here I am now, at 7:30 in the morning, armed with a sword stick and revolver, the duly elected Thursday of the Central Council of Anarchists, steaming in a small tug up to the embankment. I suppose this is where I go ashore. up these enormous steps. They almost dwarf that man standing there in a silk hat and frock coat. He must be the man I'm to meet. I'll find out.
Excuse me. I have a note from Mr. Buttons.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good heavens. What a frightful smile. Crooked. All on one side.
Yes. This seems to be in order. If we walk up towards Leicester Square, we shall just be in time for breakfast. This is the shortest way, I think. I'd better tell you the President's last notion. He's carrying his policy of concealing ourselves by not concealing ourselves to the most extraordinary lengths. We positively flaunt ourselves before the public. We have our breakfast on a balcony, if you please, overlooking Leicester Square.
And what do people say?
Quite simple. They say we are a lot of jolly gentlemen who pretend to be anarchists. Oh. And there we are, up there.
I see. The balcony and the breakfast table. And those fashionably dressed and talkative men round the table, they are...
They are the European dynamiters in secret conclave. We go in this way.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Alphonse.
The gentlemen are upstairs, sir. They talk how they will throw bombs at the kings.
Out here.
So that's somebody. That gigantic back. God, what a man. A statue carved deliberately as colossal. Too big to be possible.
Mr. President, may I present Comrade Syme, the newly elected Thursday? Comrade Syme, the President.
Before you gentlemen sit down with us, I must issue a very grave warning. The omelette has by now become a little cold, and I do not recommend it. The Strasbourg pie, on the other hand, is really splendid. And now, Brother Syme, you must meet your colleagues, your partners in crime, if I may be allowed the phrase.
The rest seem commonplace enough, yet each of them seems to have a devilish detail somewhere. Like that lopsided smile of the secretary's.
Opposite you is Professor de Worms, the oldest member of our council, who still keeps the chair of Friday.
Oh, good girl.
Senile decay. He looks as if a leg or arm might fall off if he moved.
Next to him is our popular medical advisor, Dr. Bull, who fills the post of Saturday.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Ordinary looking, but somehow baffling. Smile too set. And why does he wear those horrible dark glasses? Like pennies on a dead man's eyes.
Our secretary on my left, he bears the title of Monday. You have met already.
That smile and the pain in those eyes is not physical ill. It's intellectual torture.
The gentleman on your right is Wednesday. My noble and honorable friend, the Marquis de Saint-Eustache.
Enchanté, monsieur, de faire votre connaissance.
Don't like that black French beard of his, but he's the only one here who wears his frock coat as if it belonged to him.
And finally, Tuesday, Comrade Gogol from Poland.
How do you do?
Comrade!
Like a Skye terrier. The sad eyes of the Slav behind the tangle of hair and beard.
Which brings me back to what I was saying when our new colleague arrived. Our friend Tuesday doesn't seem to grasp the idea. He insists on behaving like a stage conspirator instead of like a gentleman.
Well, I am not good at deception.
Right, my boy, right. You aren't good at anything.
If I may intrude a practical note into this discussion, Mr. President, I would ask that we should now consider the plans for the assassination of the Tsar and the President of the French Republic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Since you have done me the honor of selecting me to carry the bomb, I should like to be sure that the assassination is carried out with efficiency and dispatch. Bird, would you be so good as to pass me the marmalade?
I agree, Mr. President. It is only 3 days before the Tsar arrives in Paris, and his reception by the French president offers us a unique opportunity of killing two birds with one stone. I suggest that the meeting should first express its views as to the most suitable type of bomb for this auspicious occasion.
Terrifying, that crooked smile of the secretary's. But there's one thing even more terrifying. The way the president never takes his eyes off me. I'm sure he's somehow found out that I'm a spy. There's a policeman down there in the square. A placid, normal policeman. If I were to call to him... Oh, good God, I can't. That's the one thing I can't do. I promised Gregory. I gave him my word.
I don't think our friend Syme heard you, Marquis. He appears a trifle preoccupied.
I beg your pardon. I was
asking, Syme, if you didn't think it would be better for me to do the killing with a knife. No more toast, thank you.
It has already been decided that the weapon shall be a bomb. And I suggest that tomorrow morning, Comrade Wednesday...
Before we discuss that, let us go into a private room. I have something very particular to say.
He has found me out. I must decide now. There's the policeman still, just below. No. Thank God for the barrel organ. It is decided for me. The president is wrong and the barrel organ is right. It's as simple as that. That barrel organ is the battle music of all the common and kindly people whose ambassador I am. If they can keep their old world obligations to the decencies of Christendom, then by God, so can I. It will be my last triumph over these lunatics to die for something they cannot even understand.
So you say you not died. You say you show him selves. But when you want to talk importance, you hang yourselves in this closed box.
Stop talking, Gogol, and sit down with the others at this table.
Oh.
For the first time this morning, something intelligent is going to be said. I propose that the plans we were about to discuss upstairs should not be voted by this meeting, but should be left in the control of some one reliable member. I suggest Comrade Saturday, Dr. Bull.
I do
not one detail more about what we mean to do must be mentioned in this company. There is, of course, only one possible reason for forbidding free speech at this festival of freedom. It is that there is one among us who is not of us, who knows our purpose, but does not share it.
It can't be.
Yes, there is a traitor at this table. I will waste no more words. His name...
Now for it.
His name, I say, is Gogol. He is that hairy humbug over there who pretends to be a Pole.
Down, all of you.
Well, Mr. Gogol, or whatever your name may really be, will you oblige me by putting your hand in your waistcoat pocket and showing me what you have there? I thought so. A blue card. Inscribed, I believe, with the words, The Last Crusade. Pathetic Slav, tragic child of Poland, are you prepared in the presence of that card to deny that you are in this company, shall we say, Ditro?
Righto, it's a fair cop. All I say is I don't believe any Pole could have imitated my accent the way I did his.
Do you mind leaving your beard with your card?
Not a bit. I'll get it off.
Now listen to me. I like you. Consequently, it would distress me for about 2 minutes if I heard that you had died in torments. Well, if you ever tell the police or any human soul about us, I shall have that 2 minutes of discomfort. On your discomfort, I will not dwell. Good day. Mind the step. Well, I must be off. I have to taking chair at a humanitarian meeting.
Ought we not to discuss the details of our project now that the spy has left us?
No, Mr. Secretary, I think not. Let Saturday settle it. I must go. Breakfast here next Sunday.
But I must protest, President, that this is irregular. I really fail to understand.
That's it. You fail to understand. Why, you dancing donkey. You didn't want to be overheard by a spy, did you? How do you know you aren't overheard now?
Well, gentlemen, it seems that the meeting is adjourned.
If Sunday's last words this morning meant anything, I haven't passed unsuspected. He couldn't denounce me like Gogol, but still, he doesn't trust me like the others. Ooh, it's turned cold. Why, it's starting to snow. Damn. Better shelter in this doorway for a while. Wonder why that old man on the pavement doesn't take shelter. He'll be a snowman if he stands there much longer. Good heavens. It's that paralytic old Professor de Worms. What's he doing here? Not that I care. All I want is to get away from him. That's what I must do. Get away from the whole poisonous atmosphere for an hour or two. I'll take a good brisk walk. Try to collect my thoughts. Get back in time to have lunch in Soho somewhere.
Waiter?
Sir.
Waiter, my bill, please.
Minestrone, fritto misto, zambaioni, chianti, and
coffee.
1 and 10 pence, sir, altogether.
What the... Tell me, waiter. Huh? The old gentleman at the table by the door. Has he been here long?
Oh, he came in just after you, sir. Ordered a glass of milk. A very old gentleman, sir.
Too old. Much too old.
Sir, your change, sir. You've forgotten your change.
Can that old corpse be following me? Surely Sunday would not be such a fool as to send a lame man. One comfort. If I really step out, I can put a man like that as far away as Timbuktu. Past four. Wonder if there are any tea shops open in the Strand on a Sunday afternoon. This looks like one. Here. Yes, it is. Good.
Good afternoon.
Pot of tea, please. No, I think I'll have some coffee. Black coffee, please.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
A glass of milk. If you please. No! This is fantastic!
It's impossible. He can only walk like a snail, and I've been walking like the wind. I must get away. But how? When he always catches me up. Omnibus. That's it. Catch that omnibus. God knows where I've got to. Ought to have asked the conductor when I got off. Docks. Might be Wapping, perhaps. Dismal district, whatever it is. What I need is a drink. Foul-looking tavern, this. But any port in a storm?
Beer, please.
Pint or half?
Make it a pint.
What's your friend drinking?
What?
I should like a glass of milk, please.
I don't believe it. I won't believe it.
All right, Professor. As you've followed me so far, I don't pretend to guess how. Follow me over to that table. Well?
Are you a policeman?
A policeman? Whatever made you think I was a policeman?
The process was simple enough. I thought you looked like a policeman. I think so now.
Oh, ridiculous. Why on earth?
Did you hear me ask a plain question, you paltering spy? Are you or are you not a police detective?
No, I am not.
Oh, well, that's a pity. Because I am.
You are what?
I am a policeman. And since I met you in a dynamiter's club, I suppose I ought to arrest you. This card is my authority.
But this is the funniest thing I ever heard. Why, three of us at that breakfast table this morning were policemen. 3 out of 7 is a fighting number.
If we had been 300, we could still have done nothing.
Not 300 against 4?
Not 300 against Sunday.
Sunday. Professor, this is intolerable. Are you afraid of this man?
Yes, I am. So are you.
You are right. I am afraid of him. And no man should leave in the universe anything of which he is afraid.
Where are you going?
I am going to prevent this bomb being thrown in Paris.
Have you any conception how?
No.
The whole arrangements for the crime were left in the hands of the Marquis and Dr. Bull. The Marquis is by this time crossing the Channel. But where he will go and what he will do, we don't know. The only man who does know is Dr. Bull.
And we don't know where he is.
Oh, I know where he is. But he will have gone to bed by now. We must call on him tomorrow morning, and we shall be well advised to take our revolvers and sword sticks. Meanwhile, we can dine and spend the night at an excellent inn I know in the East India Dock Road.
A strange place to find a good inn.
Oh, you can find good English inns left by accident everywhere. I once found a decent place in the West End.
Are you sure you won't have any more pie? Oh. No? Oh. Another glass of burgundy, then.
Thank you. I will. Ah. It's very good burgundy.
Oh, yes.
And that's a very good get-up of yours. A lot better than old Gogol's. Even at the start, I thought he was a bit too hairy.
A difference of artistic theory. Gogol was an idealist. He made up as the abstract ideal of an anarchist. I am a realist, a portrait painter. Indeed, I am more. I am a portrait.
I don't understand you.
I am a portrait of the celebrated Professor de Worms, the great German nihilist philosopher.
You mean you're made up like him?
Yes.
But doesn't he know that you're taking his nose in vain?
Oh, he knows it right enough.
Then why doesn't he denounce you?
I have denounced him.
Do explain yourself.
I am, by profession, an actor. When I was on the stage, I mixed with all sorts of bohemian riffraff, including political refugees, among whom was Professor de Worms. His appearance was very disgusting, so I studied it carefully. Because I disliked him so much, I resolved to caricature him. So I made myself up into what was meant for a wild exaggeration of the old professor's dirty old self. I went into a room full of his supporters, expecting to be received with a roar of laughter. But I'd been too subtle, too true. They all accepted me as the genuine article. But hardly had I got into my stride when the real Professor de Worms arrived. The disciples all looked anxiously from one professor to the other professor to see which was the more feeble. But of course, I had an advantage. A real paralytic couldn't be half so paralytic as a vigorous young actor like me. So they were convinced. The real professor was thrown out. Oh, not with violence, though one man tried very patiently to pull off his nose. The professor is now, I believe, received everywhere in Europe as a delightful impostor.
Well, I can understand your putting on his dirty old beard for a practical joke, but I don't understand your never taking it off again.
Ah, now that is the rest of the story. Going home, I was stopped by an enormous policeman who told me I was wanted. I struck a paralytic attitude and cried, "Yes, I am wanted by the oppressed of the world. You are arresting me on the charge of being the great anarchist, Professor de Worms." To which the policeman replied, "Not exactly, sir. I am arresting you on the charge of not being the great anarchist, Professor de Worms." So I was taken to Scotland Yard and shown into the presence of a high police officer. But I can't tell you much about him because he...
I know. Because you talk to him in a dark room.
You too?
Yes.
Ah. Well, now listen to me, Sime. Tomorrow we are going to attempt something much more dangerous than stealing the crown jewels. We are trying to steal a secret from a very sharp, very strong, and very wicked man. Sunday was not asleep when he locked up the plans of this outrage in the round, black head of Dr. Bull. So I think the sooner we get some sleep, the better.
Do these damn stairs and pools go on and on to infinity?
This seems to be the top at last. And here is Dr. Bull's name on the door.
Good morning, Comrade Bull.
Good morning. Come in and sit down.
Those black glasses. They make him look like a death's head.
We're sorry to disturb you so early, comrade. You have no doubt made all arrangements for the Paris affair? It seems to me unquestionably urgent that action of some kind...
Professor, I have an intuition.
Don't be a fool, Simon.
I'm not a fool. I'm a poet. Dr. Bull, would you do me a favor? Would you be so kind as to take off your spectacles? There you are. I knew I was a poet. I knew my intuition was infallible. Look at his face. Look at his collar. Look at his blessed boots. You don't suppose, do you, that that's an anarchist?
Same.
Damn it, I'll take the risk myself. Dr. Bull, I am a police officer. Here's my card.
And here's mine.
Aha!
I'm awfully glad you chaps have come. Now we can all start for France together. Yes, I'm in the new detective corps, right enough.
But good Lord! There were more damned detectives than there were damned dynamiters at the damned council.
Yes, we were 4-3.
No, we were not so lucky. We were 4-1.
Sunday.
At what time does this boat get into Calais?
At 12:15. The Marquis will still be at Calais when we arrive. Ah, you know, it's jolly to get some pals. I've been half dead with the jumps, being quite alone. Why, everyone despised me for having been in a blue funk.
All the blue devils in blue hell contributed to my blue funk. But the worst devil was you and your infernal gobbles.
Wasn't it a rag? Such a simple idea. You see, they said I looked too healthy and optimistic and benevolent. They called me all sorts of names at Scotland Yard. But at last I was brought before an old josser, very high up in the force, who made a most extraordinary remark. "A pair of dark spectacles will do it," he said. "Look at him now, like an angelic office boy. But put a pair of dark spectacles on him and children will scream at the sight of him." And so it was, by George. Simple enough, and it was done, like all miracles. But I still haven't told you the really miraculous part of it.
What was that?
This big pot in the police who sized me up and knew how the goggles would go with my hair and socks, he never saw me at all. No. We talked in a pitch-dark room like a coal cellar. There.
You'd never have guessed that.
I could not have conceived it.
It is indeed a new idea.
Well, what are we going to do when we get to France?
Somehow, we must keep the Marquis in Calais and prevent him getting to Paris in time for his appointment. I've turned over 20 schemes in my head, and the only thing I can think of is to take advantage of the very things that are in the Marquis's favor. The fact that he is a highly respected nobleman, has many friends, and moves in the best society.
What the devil are you talking about?
The Symes are first mentioned in the 14th century. And there is a tradition that one of them rode behind Bruce at Bannockburn.
Are you seasick or joking in the wrong place, Armstrong?
My remarks are almost painfully practical. The House of Saint-Eustache is also very ancient. The Marquis cannot deny that he is a gentleman, nor that I am a gentleman. And to put the matter of my social position beyond a doubt, I propose at the earliest opportunity to knock his hat off.
I take it, Syme, that you don't intend to sit at this cafe all day enjoying this admirable wine, of which it would appear that you've had quite enough already. Would you be good enough to tell us what you're doing, kid?
By all means. I intend to walk over to that table at which the Marquis is sitting with those two solemn Frenchmen. I intend to pull the Marquis's great, ugly, mahogany-coloured nose.
What?
Gentlemen.
Good afternoon. You are Mr. Syme, I think.
And you are the Marquis de Saint-Eustache. Permit me to pull your nose.
The Marquis?
This man has insulted me.
Insulted you? When?
Just now. He insulted my aunt.
Monsieur, how can the Marquis have insulted your aunt just now? He has been sitting here all the time.
Ah, it was what he said?
I said nothing, except something about the band. Only said that I liked Wagner, played well.
That was an allusion to my family. My aunt plays Wagner badly. It is a painful subject. We are always being insulted about it.
I believe you are simply seeking a pretext to insult the Marquis.
George, what a clever chap you are.
Seeking a fight with me? Mon Dieu, there was never a man who had to seek long. This gentleman will perhaps act for me. Let us fight this evening.
Permit me to consult for a moment with those gentlemen in whose hands I shall place myself. My friends, I have done it. I have fixed a fight on the beast. But listen carefully. You are my seconds. You must insist absolutely on the duel taking place after 7 tomorrow morning, so as to prevent him from catching the 7:45 train to Paris. If I know him, he will insist on our meeting somewhere near a wayside station where he can pick up the train, trusting to kill me in time to catch it. But I can fence well enough to keep him in play until the train is lost. You understand? Very well, then. Let me introduce you to some charming friends of mine. Gentlemen, permit me to present my seconds. This venerable gentleman is none other than the Earl of Blackfriars. And the dark glasses conceal the features of that well-known sportsman, the Honourable Mark Lane. You will no doubt wish to arrange with them the time and place of the encounter tomorrow morning.
My dear Syme, it's only 10 minutes since I told you the time was 7:05. It is now, therefore, 7:05.
I'm sure you enjoy passing the time of day with your friends. And so far, all has gone as, with my usual intuition, I so accurately predicted. Fortunately, the railway line beside this field is very straight, so we shall get good warning of the approach of the train. Tell me, have you persuaded the Marquis's seconds that the duel should continue until one of us is disabled?
I did eventually, though Colonel Ducroix wanted it to terminate with the first considerable hurt. I'm not quite clear myself why you are so anxious.
Because, you blockhead, I think I can avoid disabling the Marquis and, what's more, prevent the Marquis disabling me for at least 10 minutes. And in 10 minutes, the Paris train will have gone by.
Oh. Look out. They're coming over.
We are ready, gentlemen, when you are. My principal is anxious that we begin at once.
At once?
Do you still insist that the fight should be prolonged until one of the combatants is disabled?
To a man of the well-known skill and valor of Monsieur Toussaint Justas. It must be a matter of indifference which method is adopted. And our principal has strong reasons
for... Oh, pest, let us stop talking and begin.
A sword for Monsieur le Marquis.
Give it to me.
A sword for Monsieur Sain.
Thank you. Yes, a very fine weapon. I could not have chosen a better. It has balance, temper, a shade heavy, perhaps.
Why do we not begin?
Positions, gentlemen, please. So. You are ready, gentlemen? So. En garde. Allez!
Double feint left. Right. Deceive parry. Lunge over wrist. Recover. 1, 2, 3. Parry cream and bind. Feint right arm. Deceive. I'm going to be killed. This is real fear. The plain and pitiless fear of death. No more nightmares now. Only this terrible opponent. And myself fighting for my life. Counter parry. Retreat. Invite. Parry septime. Flesh attack. Strange. I thought I felt my point go home then. No blood on blade or shirt, though. Lunge. Recover. Parry cart. Left, right, left, right. Parry second and bound blade. What's this? Why this sudden frenzy of attack? I know why. Behind me, the Paris train must be in sight. Now is my chance, while his fury makes him wild. Pericard, redouble. Opening octave. Beat blade and lunge. No doubt about that hit. I pierced his body, my sword bent under his weight. Yet why is there no blood on my sword? Recover. Feint throat. Deceive. Lunge. Again. His neck that time. Below the jaw. I felt my point enter. And still there is no blood on my sword. And this time I must make certain. Aim at his head and leave a bloody wound on his cheek. Attack. 1, 2, 3. Harry. Voltaire. But there is no blood. Angels and ministers of grace defend us. How can I defend myself against a devil that no sword can wound? At least I can do the one thing Satan himself cannot do. I can die.
Stop! I want to say something.
What is the matter? Has there been foul play?
There has been foul play somewhere. Our principal has wounded the Marquis 3 times at least. And he is none the worse.
Let me speak. It is important. Mr. Syme, we are fighting, if I remember rightly, because you expressed a wish to pull my nose. Would you oblige me by pulling my nose now, as quickly as possible? I have a train to catch.
This is most irregular.
It is certainly quite unprecedented. I do not recall...
Will you or will you not pull my nose?
Since you insist, I will pull it.
So...
Good God, it's come off in his hand.
Oh, if I had known that I was acting for a poltroon who pants himself to fight.
Oh, I know. My beard, sign, catch. I can't explain now. Can't you see the train is stopping?
You shall not go by this train.
What in infernal places should I want to go by the train?
We know all. You are going to Paris to throw a bomb.
Going to Jericho to throw a jabberwock. I don't care if I never catch the Paris train. Damn the Paris train. I care whether the train catches me. And now, by God, it has caught me.
What do you mean by saying the train has caught you?
I mean everything. And the end of everything. Sunday has us now in the hollow of his hand.
Us? What do you mean by us?
The police, of course. I am Inspector Ratcliffe.
No. What?
I don't have any doubt about me. I have a car.
Oh, not another.
Oh, we've got enough of those to equip a paper chase.
Oh, mon Dieu, what is all this?
Colonel Ducroix... We owe you and your friend an apology. But we are very desperate men at war with a vast conspiracy. A secret society of anarchists is hunting us like hares. That is why we are driven to such disguises as these, for which we apologize.
Bon, I accept the apology. But the sight of an acquaintance coming to pieces in the open air is unusual. Colonel de Croix, if you agree with me that our present society is a little abnormal, let us walk back to the town.
No, no, by heaven I won't. If these gentlemen are really in a mess with a lot of low anarchists, I will see them through it.
But wait a minute. If this is true, the whole bally lot of us on the council were really detectives, except the president and his personal secretary.
Don't you know that Sunday's jokes are always so big and simple that no one has ever thought of them? There were just five people, perhaps, who might have interfered with his plans. And the old devil put them all on the Supreme Council to waste their time watching each other. Meanwhile, he was getting control of every cable and steamship and railway line, especially that railway line.
Well?
Well, it only remains for him to capture this field and all the fools in it. My objection to the arrival of that train was that Sunday or his secretary has this moment got out of it.
What?
They're a long way off, but it does seem to be a crowd of people moving this way.
Ah, it was a habit of the late Marquis de Saint-Eustache to carry a pair of opera glasses.
Give me those glasses. Yes, yes. Most of the crowd look ordinary enough, but two or three of the leaders are wearing black half-masks. Oh, as they talked, they smiled, and one of them smiled on one side. Well, the president isn't with them anyhow.
We don't amount to much in Sunday's universe. To kill the Supreme Council, he regards as a trivial matter, like a postcard. It may be left to his private secretary. Well, if anyone prefers not to be killed, I strongly advise him to walk after me.
Oh,
you see that hill just ahead? Well, below it, the road drops down to the seaport of Lancy. And I think that part of the country is the least likely to be with them. Come on.
What could you mean by all this, Marquis? They can't be running the whole world in that way. Not many working men are anarchists, and if they were, mere mobs could not beat modern armies and police.
You talk about mobs and the working classes as if they were the question. You got that eternal, idiotic idea that if anarchy came, it would come from the poor. Why should it? The poor have sometimes objected to being governed badly. The rich have always objected to being governed at all. Most of Sunday's right-hand men are millionaires. That's how he's got hold of all the communications. That's why we last four champions of the anti-anarchist police force are running for our lives.
Here they come, moving down the hillside like a well-trained army. We haven't a moment to lose.
Oh, we'd better keep these four dueling swords. They're the only weapons we have.
All the more reason for going to see my friend Renard, who lives in that large house there. He is a very fine fellow. And he has a motor car.
A motor car! Hurrah for Renard!
You can make it three cheers if you like. He has actually three cars.
Oh, well, come on.
Oh, for God's sake, Simon, can't you get any of the cars to start?
I'll make one more effort. Again, Simon, again. They'll be here in no time.
Oh. They're here already. Listen.
Ah, they're off. I think we should be safe by now. There's the light of the police station.
You know, this is all raving nonsense. If you really think that the ordinary people in these ordinary houses are anarchists, you must be mad.
What's that? Stop that car, Sime. Look, there. Across the end of the street. Two motor cars. The other two cars from Dr. Renard's garage.
And they are full of men in masks.
Oh, absurd. Dr. Renard would never give them his cars.
They may have been forced. The whole town's on their side.
Oh, I don't believe it. The plain people of a peaceable French town. Mon Dieu, someone has shot at us.
Pray continue your remarks, Colonel. You were talking, I think, about the plain people of a peaceable French town.
Oh, it is extraordinary.
A fastidious person might even call it unpleasant. However, the gendarmerie is not far. We can soon get there.
No, we shall never get there. I can see two rows of armed men across the road already. The town is in arms as I said it was. And I can only wallow in the exquisite comfort of my own exactitude.
Why, you silly mugs! That crowd's on our side! Don't you see who's leading them?
Thank God, it is Renner. Of course, he's turned out to help us.
Stop here, Syme. He may want us to turn. I'll run and ask him. Dr. Renner! Dr. Renner!
No! No!
Look out, Ball!
He's all right. Renner missed him.
He's coming back. Well, Bull, what do you think now?
I think I may be mad, but I know that humanity isn't. I don't think, and I never shall, that the mass of ordinary men are a pack of dirty anarchists.
You're a very fine fellow, Bull, and you're right enough about humanity, about peasants and ordinary people, but Renard is rich. I suspected him from the first.
Oh, if you knew Renard as I do, why, it is like calling Queen Victoria a dynamiter. I tell you, it cannot be. Renard shall explain it. I'm going over to them.
No, Colonel.
It's no good. They're closing in on us. I vote we drive bang through the thick of them.
No, give the Colonel a chance.
Shall we go back then?
We can't. Advancing from behind us, too.
Stop! Look there! The gendarmes are out!
Why don't they disperse the mob?
They're forming up along the parade.
Ah, they've unslung their carbines.
Yes, and they're going to fire on us.
Down!
The gendarmes are drunk!
What does it matter? We shall all be dead soon.
Where's the Colonel? I thought he was with us.
He went to speak to Renard.
We can't leave him among all those beasts.
Do not pity the Colonel. He is extremely comfortable. He said he was going over to them. He has gone over to them.
Not the Colonel, too. I will never believe it.
Will you believe your eyes? There, advancing towards us. He and the secretary are leading the advance.
Then let us advance to meet them. I have something to say to that secretary. Hi there, you, Monday, or whatever you call yourself.
Well, Mr. Syme.
Listen, take that twisted leer off your face and listen to my last word. Do you see the hilt of this sword in my hand? It is a shape you hate. It is a cross. You did not make it. You can make nothing. You can only destroy. Well, you may hope to destroy mankind. You may hope to destroy the world. But the sword that is a cross and the cross that is a sword, you and your empire of apes can never destroy. Come on, my friends. Let us charge these dogs, for our time has come to die.
There is some mistake. Mr. Syme, I hardly think you understand your position. I arrest you in the name of the law.
Of the law?
I'm a detective from Scotland Yard. My card.
And what do you suppose we are?
You, as I know for a fact, are members of the Supreme Anarchist Council. Disguised as one of you.
There never was any Supreme Anarchist Council. We were all a lot of silly policemen looking at each other. And all these nice people who've been shooting at us thought we were dynamiters. I knew I couldn't be wrong about the mob. Vulgar people are never mad. I'm vulgar myself, and I know. I feel more cheerful this morning, back in dear old London.
But we still don't know what it all means. I mean, if we are all harmless policemen, what is Sunday? If he hasn't seized the world, what on earth has he been up to?
We shall find out soon. In 30 minutes, we have our next general meeting. You will excuse me for being well acquainted with my secretarial duties.
I suppose we might find out from him. But I confess, I'm a bit afraid of asking Sunday who he really is.
Why? For fear of bombs?
No. For fear he might tell me.
Well, fortune must be favouring us, or she wouldn't have reunited us last night with our hairy friend here, or friend that used to be hairy, old Gogol.
Well, I feel more cheerful too since I met you all again. Now we are six men going to ask one man what he means.
I think it is queerer than that. I think it is six men going to ask one man what they mean. The President. Here he is.
Good morning. So pleased to see you all. What an exquisite day. Is the Tsar dead?
No, sir. There has been no massacre. I bring you news of no such disgusting spectacles.
Disgusting spectacles? Oh, you mean Dr. Bull's spectacles?
My spectacles are blackguardly, but I'm not. Look at my face without them.
I dare say it's the sort of face that grows on one. In fact, it grows on you.
We have no time for tomfoolery. We have come here to know what all this means. Who are you? Why did you get us all here? Do you know who and what we are?
If you want to know what you are, you are a set of highly well-intentioned young jackasses.
And you? What are you?
You want to know what I am, do you? I will tell you this. Since the beginning of the world, all men have sought to know what I am. Sages, poets, and lawgivers. All the churches and all the philosophies. But I've never been pinned down yet. I've given them a good run for their money. And I will now.
Look out!
He'll be over the balustrade.
Stop him!
There's one thing I'll tell you about who I am. I am the man in the dark room who made you all policemen.
He's over! Stop him! Stop him!
Don't let him get away after him!
Handsome! I'm going to jump too! Follow me!
You'll break your leg! Better by the stairs!
Come on, go. I'm with you.
Come on, Bull! After him! Quick!
Which way did he go?
There, in that hansom outside the Alhambra. Here's another cab. Stop it, Bull!
Hey, cabby!
In, both of you, quick! Driver, follow that cab. There, that one, passing the Empire.
Right, sir. Jump in, Governor. Get up, come on.
Stop me! Stop me! Stop
me! They're closing in on him. His cab's slowing down. It's stopped. We've got him at last. He can't get away from us now.
He has got away from us. Look, there he goes, over the railings like a huge cat.
Hell and damnation! Stop, driver! Stop! This was when it got over. Give me a leg up, one of you.
Right. What's on the other side?
I can't see anything but trees. But I can hear something, and I don't like the sound of it.
Here come the others.
What's the matter? Where's Sunday?
He hasn't given us a slip, has he?
What place can this be?
Can it be the old devil's house?
I hear the most horrible noises, like devils laughing and sneezing.
His dog's barking, of course.
Did you ever hear a dog bark like that?
The dogs of Sunday have been no ordinary dogs.
Listen to that. Is that a dog? Anybody's dog? Come on. Follow me, and keep together.
These shrubs are damn thick. How the devil did Sunday squeeze his great carcass through them?
I found a path. Look out, someone's coming. A man in uniform.
Why, you asses. I know where we are. We're in the zoo. That man's a keeper.
He probably wants our sixpences.
Governor, has he come this way?
Has what come this way?
An elephant has gone mad and run off with an old gentleman.
What sort of old gentleman?
A very large, fat old gentleman with white hair.
Well, if he's that kind of old gentleman, the elephant hasn't run away with him. He's run away with the elephant. And by thunder, there he is.
Hey, hold here. Stop him. Stop him. If he had a gun.
Stop a landslide? He is out of the gate.
Back to the cabs, quick, or we'll lose him altogether. Come on.
We must have chased that infernal elephant half across London. Where the devil are we now?
Look, there's a captive balloon and the top of the great wheel. It must be Earl's Court.
First the zoo and now the exhibition. Sunday seems to be living entirely for pleasure. I wonder what the price of admission is for an elephant.
They haven't admitted it. There it is, outside that turnstile.
But devil take the elephant. Where's its rider? You there! You! Where has he gone to?
Gentleman rushed into the exhibition, sir. Funny gentleman, sir. Asked me to hold his horse and gave me this pachyderm, sir. And a letter addressed to the secretary of the Central Anarchist Council.
Monday.
I'll take it. Give it to me.
What is it? Anything serious?
Serious. Read it.
It says, fly at once. The truth about your trouser stretchers is known. It's signed, a friend.
If you're the gatekeeper, why the eternal crikey did you let the man in?
Well,
do people commonly come to your exhibition riding on mad elephants?
What, the balloon! Look! The balloon!
What the blazes is the matter?
The captive balloon has escaped. And so has he.
Ah, 10,000 devils! He's got into it. There he goes, right over our heads.
Oh. God, bless my soul. Something fell on the top of my hat. Oh. Why, it's another message. Your beauty has not left me indifferent, little snowdrop.
We're not beaten yet. The blasted balloon must come down somewhere. Let's follow it.
Ah, the 27th ploughed field we've ploughed through since we left the camp. And all of them are sticking to my boots.
Well, in view of the persistent refusal of the balloon to follow the roads, and a still more persistent refusal of the cabman to follow the balloon, what other course could we pursue?
We're not pursuing a course. We're pursuing a beastly balloon that bloweth where it jolly well listeth.
At the moment, it's hardly moving at all. So surely we can take it easy for a few seconds.
Oh, please. My feet are killing me.
It's really very beautiful.
What's beautiful?
That gas bag up there, hanging in the sunset like a sunset cloud.
I wish the blasted thing would burst. Little snowdrop indeed.
No, I hope it won't. Somehow, I don't want the old boy hurt.
What? Do you believe that tale about his being our man in the dark room? Sunday would say he was anybody.
I don't understand a word about his being the same man who gave us all our blue cards. It seems to make everything nonsense. But I don't care who knows it. I always had a sympathy for old Sunday himself, wicked as he was. There's a sort of gaiety about him. Like a spring day. Like that bit in the Bible. Why leap ye high hills? That's why I like Sunday. Because he's such a bounder.
Personally, I don't think about Sunday at all, on principle. Any more than I stare at the sun at noon.
When I first saw Sunday on that Leicester Square balcony, I saw only his back. And I knew he was the worst man in the world. Brutal, hardly human. Then I entered the hotel and saw his face. And his face terrified me. Not because it was brutal or evil, but because it was so beautiful. Because it was so good.
Syme, are you ill?
When I saw him from behind, I was certain he was an animal. And when I saw him in front, I knew he was a god.
Ah, yes. Pan was god and animal.
That, for me, is the mystery of Sunday. And it is also the mystery of the world. When I see the horrible back, I'm sure the noble face is but a mask. When I see the face but for an instant, I know the back is only a jest. Shall I tell you the secret of the whole world? It is that we have only known the back of the world. We see everything from behind, and it looks brutal. But cannot you see that everything is stooping and hiding a face? If we could only get round in front.
Look! The balloon's coming down into the trees.
He's dead. Now I know he was my friend. My friend in the dark.
Dead? Not he. If he's been tipped out of the car, we shall find him rolling like a colt in a field, kicking his legs for fun.
Clashing his hooves, like Pan.
Oh, Pan again. You seem to think the Pan is everything.
Oh, so he is. In Greek, Pan means everything.
It fell over there. We must find it. Oh, if he has cheated us all by getting killed, it would be like one of his larks.
One moment, Simon. Here's someone coming to meet us.
Like an ambassador or something. In old-fashioned knee breeches.
Gentlemen, my master has carriages waiting for you in the road just by.
Who is your master?
I was told you knew his name.
Where are these carriages?
They have not been waiting long. My master has only just come home.
Show us the place.
If you gentlemen will follow me.
Carriages. God knows whose. Enough that they are carriages. With cushions. Oh, the comfort of carriages and cushions after our endless journey. Endless? Perhaps this is really journey's end. Great stone gates, ancient trees. There, ahead of us. But I know this house. It reminds me of my boyhood. That crooked path. The elm tops above the roof. Whatever it is, I remember this place of old. The house from which the heavens are fed. The old strange house that is our own. Where tricks of words are never said. And mercy is as plain as bread. And honor is as hard as stone.
Welcome, gentlemen. Refreshments are provided for you in your rooms. These men will guide you.
Will you follow me, sir?
If you'd like to come,
please. Please.
I have put out your clothes, sir.
Clothes? I have no clothes, but these rags and tatters.
My master asks me to say that there is a fancy dress ball tonight, and that he desires you to put on this costume. And here is a bottle of burgundy and some cold pheasant, as it is some hours before supper.
Cold pheasant is a good thing, and burgundy is a spanking good thing. But really, I don't want either of them so much as I want to know what the devil all this means, and what this costume is supposed to be.
You six gentlemen are wearing the costumes of your day, sir. So you're to be dressed as Thursday. Shall I help you on with it, sir?
Yes, hitch the bally thing on. But why should I be particularly like Thursday in a green robe affair, spotted all over with the sun, moon, and stars? These orbs, I think, shine on other days. I once saw the moon on Tuesday, I remember.
I do beg your pardon, sir. A Bible also provided for you.
Bible?
This is the bit here, sir. Genesis chapter 1, verse 16.
And God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. The fourth day. Thursday. And I am the man who was Thursday.
Yes, sir. Will you join the company now, sir? They are waiting for you downstairs. This way, sir.
This is getting wilder and wilder. Who are all these crowds of people? What are these lights, this music? Above all, who is this benefactor who provides cold pheasant and burgundy and green clothes and Bibles? Does he provide everything?
Yes, sir. Everything. Everything.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything.
There is one sin to call a green leaf grey, whereat the sun in heaven shuddereth. There is one blasphemy for death to pray, for God alone knoweth the praise of death. There is one greed, beneath the world terror's wing, apples forget to grow on apple trees. There is one thing is needful, everything. The rest is vanity of vanities.
And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And on the seventh day, which is Sunday, God ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it.
Sunday.
Let us remain together a little, we who have loved each other so sadly and have fought so long. Whether it was but recently, for time is nothing, or at the beginning of the world, I sent you out to fight. I sat in the darkness where there is not any created thing, and to you I was only a voice commanding more than mortal valor and virtue. You heard the voice in the darkness, and you never heard it again. The sun in heaven denied it. The earth and sky denied it. All human wisdom denied it. And when I met you in the daylight, I denied it myself.
Who and what are you?
I am Sunday, the Sabbath. I am the peace of God. I am everything.
That is what I cannot forgive you. If you were the man in the dark room, why were you also Sunday, an offense to the sunlight? If you were from the first our father and friend, why were you also our greatest enemy? We suffered, we fled in terror, the iron entered into our souls. And you are the peace of God.
I do not feel fierce like that. My soul and heart are happy and quiet here. But my reason is still crying out. I should like to know.
It seems so silly that you should have been on both sides and fought against yourself.
I understand nothing, but I am happy.
I am not happy, because I do not understand. You let me stray a little too near to hell.
I wish I knew why I was hurt so much.
I have heard your complaints in order. And here, I think, comes another to complain. And we will hear him also.
Gregory! Why? This is the real anarchist.
Yes. I am the real anarchist.
Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them.
You are right. I am a destroyer. I hate everything. But I do not hate anything so much as I hate you.
I never hated you.
You never hated because you never lived. I know what you are. All of you. You are the people in power. You are the law, and you have never been broken. You sit serene and safe in great chairs of stone, and you have never come down from them. You are the seven angels of heaven, and you have had no troubles. Oh, I could forgive you everything. You that rule all mankind, if I could feel for once that you had suffered for 1 hour a real agony such as I...
Stop! I see everything. Everything that there is. Why does each thing on the earth war against each other thing? Why does each small thing in the world have to fight against the whole world itself? For the same reason that I had to be alone in the dreadful council of the days. So that by tears and torture, we may earn the right to say to this blasphemer, "You lie. We also have suffered." It is not true that we have never descended into hell. I can answer for every one of these great guards of law whom he has accused. At least, for all but one. You, master of us all, have you ever suffered?
Can ye drink of the cup that I drink of?
The world grows terrible and white and blinding white, the breaking day. We walk bewildered in the light, for something is too large for sight and something much too plain to say.
Oh, you have a genius, Sime, for elaborating the obvious. I can see for myself that the dawn is breaking, and very glad I am to see it. I'm tired and I'm hungry. I'm tired of walking and I'm tired of talking. In short, I'm tired of this whole damned endless argument of ours. After all this time, we're simply back where we started.
You're right, Gregory. You're even more right than you realize. We are indeed back where we started. Those roofs and chimneys ahead of us, silhouetted against the clear dawn sky, there can surely be only one London suburb with a skyline so fantastically odd.
Saffron Park? Well, I'm damned, so it is. We must have been walking in a circle. I suppose it is Saffron Park. It looks the same, and yet somehow it looks different.
It looks the same for a very simple reason. It is the same. The reason why it looks different is not so simple. In a rather peculiar sense, we are seeing it in a new light.
You mean the dawn?
I mean something even more magical and mystical than the dawn. The trees and the houses in front of us now are the same that we left behind us the night that our wanderings and our argument began. But we have come round to the other side of them. We have discovered the secret of the whole world. Stop me if I told you this before. All our lives, we have been looking at the back of the world. At last, we have seen its hidden face. We are the people that walked in darkness, and we have seen a great light.
Lord love a duck, Sime. Oh, you do go on.
What on earth are you talking about?
I'm not talking about anything on earth. Putting it another way, I'm talking about everything. Everything. And that reminds me of something. A verse I heard, or dreamt. Perhaps I even wrote it. This is what I mean. There is one sin, to call a green leaf grey, whereat the sun in heaven shuddereth. There is one blasphemy, for death to pray, for God alone knoweth the praise of death. There is one creed, neath no world terror's wing apples forget to grow on apple trees. There is one thing is needful, everything. The rest is vanity of vanities.